Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kierwitz 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. They'll give you, without question, the best price, the right insurance. They'll do it in a very personal way. 50 years ago this week, the first ever Major League Baseball player draft took place. And the first player ever taken was an outfielder out of Arizona State by the Kansas City A's, Rick Monday, who, by the way, went on to have a very good Major League Baseball career with the A's, with the Dodgers, with the Chicago Cubs, made the All-Star game twice, helped the Dodgers win the World Series in 81, guy had 241 home runs in his career. Rick Monday's a good player, broadcaster now for the Dodgers. And yes, he's the one, when two protesters were trying to burn the American flag in 1976, ran out there, grabbed the flag out from their hands and took it away from them as they were attempting to burn it. He was the first player ever taken in the MLB draft 50 years ago. Well, tonight, year 50, the draft takes place this evening. Round one and compensatory picks tonight. Phillies have the 10th overall pick. History on Saturday. It took 37 years. American Pharoah won the Triple Crown. Dick Girardi joined us on Friday to preview it, just like he did at the Derby and the Preakness. And after seeing history, we bring Dick back. And Dick, what was it like for you after seeing all the near misses to then see history play out before your eyes on Saturday?
It really was, Steve. I mean, I sort of knew pretty early on in the race what was going to happen. So it was just fascinating to be able to sit there and watch it play out over 2 minutes and 26 seconds and just hear the crescendo as American Pharoah came through the stretch. And it was some scene, and you're right, it's a story I always wanted to write, and I'm glad I got a chance to write it.
Not only did you write it, Dick, but you took all of us inside. I had the privilege of you emailing it to me yesterday, but you took us really inside the barn. You took us to the runway. You took us to the restaurant. When you want sit there and you want to put down what you've always wanted to write, I knew what your approach was. Just take us through that part.
Steve, the best books I read as a kid growing up were the books, A, that I didn't want to end, and B, that I felt like I was there when I was reading them. That's what I wanted to do for the people that, I mean, they could see it on TV, but they couldn't get the places I got, and I wanted to get them there. I wanted them to feel like they were talking to Bob Baffert 45 minutes before the race, and they were watching the scene in the paddock, and they were back at the barn after the race seeing the horse get a bath, and just sort of what it was like to be at Belmont Park with access that other people didn't have. And that was the approach. Cause, look, I couldn't tell them American Pharoah won the race. They knew that.
Right.
I had to tell them something they didn't know. And that's the beauty of our paper. It's always been the beauty of working at the Daily News. When I got hired there, they told me, they said, hey, everybody knows the score. Tell them something else. And that's always been my motto.
Baffert was almost speechless afterward. Did his reaction surprise you in any way?
Not really. Bob's an emotional guy, but he keeps his emotions inside, and he knew what he had all year. I mean, he knew it, and he told people privately. He's really close to. He didn't want to seem like he was bragging, but he knew this was some horse. The race he was most concerned about was the Derby, for good reason, because he wasn't quite ready for that race. And the only concern he had on Saturday, and frankly the only concern I had, was whether he was going to get targeted, whether somebody was just going to go after him on a suicide mission, which has happened before in this race. And thankfully, everybody just played it straight up, and the horses ran like they're supposed to run. And when you have the best horse in a clear lead, he's not going to lose very often. And when you have a horse this talented, he's never going to lose. But I wasn't surprised by his reaction, because he knows the history. He's lived it. He grew up in a horse racing family. His dad was a trainer from Arizona. And like, he watched, he had a great quote. There was so much I couldn't use in the story, but he had a great quote saying he watched the 73 Belmont Stakes in Secretariat with his dad on a little TV back in Nogales, Arizona. So, yeah, he knew the history, and he'd been so close. I mean, nobody had been there three times with a chance. Certainly nobody had been there four, and he knew he wasn't going to get another chance, or very unlikely. And this was his shot, and he did it. And I think he wanted to do it for the sport, for the people that worked for him, everybody. And he did. And it was the one of that where everybody walked out of there smiling.
His fastest quarter mile was his opening quarter mile. His second fastest quarter mile was his closing quarter mile. What does that tell you about this horse?
Yeah, you don't see that, Steve. For people who don't follow horse racing, horses almost never run as fast at the end of races as they do at the beginning. It's just not their style at all. They get tired. And what was fascinating about this race, and you could really see it around the turn when you watched the other riders, they were pushing and shoving on their horses, and Victor Espinosa was just sitting there like he didn't have a care in the world. And he asked him to run a little bit at the top of the stretch, then he took out his whip a little bit, and the horse took off like the race had just started. I mean, Frosta was within two lengths at the eighth pole. It was 5.5 at the finish. Steve, if you kept watching, it was 15 lengths 100 yards past the finish line. He was just rolling. He could have gone around again, and he'd have won by about 100.
Take me to the scene, Dick, where the race is over and Victor Espinosa paraded him across the grandstand. What was the sea of emotion like?
Yeah, I've never seen that before. Secretariat paraded right before his retirement at Old Aqueduct.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ron Turcotte was on him. I'm not recalling it very clearly. But that wasn't after a race. It was just he was retiring. He was going to Kentucky. I don't know whether Victor had planned that or it was spur of the moment, but it was brilliant. I mean, it was absolutely brilliant what he did. And yeah, to see the sections just rise, and I was in the press box. I couldn't hear as well as I would have liked to have heard, but you could hear enough. You could get a sense of it, and then I went back and listened to NBC, and you could really hear it there. But yeah, that was great. It was a great idea. It was beautifully done, and all the people just—I mean, they loved it. I mean, it really, as I described it in the story, it was a curtain call. What, at 16, 18 miles east of Broadway, it was just really well thought out by the jockey and the public loved it.
You know, what's really interesting about that? He ran 2.65 seconds behind Secretariat. Secretariat ran 2.24. What's interesting is Victor Espinosa, of course, had California Chrome last year. Thus, he had now has won five of the last six. People forget Ron Turcotte, when he ran Secretariat. Riva Ridge, if I recall correctly, won the Derby and the Belmont, but lost in the Slop and the Preakness. So Turcotte also won five of six. Are there some really amazing parallels to you in this?
Hey, you are correct about Turcotte. That's exactly what happened. Riva Ridge couldn't stand up in the Slop. So, yeah, Meadow Stable, Lucien Lauren, the trainer, and Ron Turcotte, the jockey, won five out of six Triple Crown races. They actually raced against each other, Secretariat and Riva Ridge, and late in 73, Secretariat beat his stablemate. But here are the parallels. Steve, I feel a little bad because people are going, well, he's not Secretariat. Well, I've been thinking about that today.
So what?
It's like, right, exactly. It's like the next young great center fielder. Well, he's not Willie Mays. Of course he's not. Nobody is. Secretariat was unique to himself. There was only one. There will never be another one. But this is a really nice horse. This is a terrific horse. And to beat this thing in the modern day is more difficult because horses, as we've talked about, don't run three times in 5 weeks. It's just not done. So I absolutely give all the credit to the horse and the people around them. But you know, there's parallels here. The one thing, times in horse racing are difficult to interpret without knowing the racetrack that they actually right. ran on. Like Saturday's track, as I pointed out, was extremely fast.
Right.
I mean, really fast. So I knew he was going to put up a pretty good time. That's why when I saw 24 seconds as I wrote for the first quarter, I said, well, this race is over. Because basically, he's run the first quarter mile. He's basically, he's galloped the first quarter mile. Now he's got to run the Derby distance. Well, we already know he could do that. He already did
right.
it.
Right.
So, yeah. But, yeah, you know, you generally try not to compare times without some context. Like, that's the best context I can give you, Steve, is we do speed figures, which essentially try to factor out the speed of the racetrack on a particular day. You're basically, you compare all the times on a given card, and then you come up with a performance number for what the horse actually did in the race.
Right.
Now the speed figure for American Pharoah is 105. And my guess is, now the numbers have been changed over the years. To give you, for instance, Secretariat's Belmont probably would have been about 120. Now, he won by 31 lengths. American Pharoah won by 5.5. You can't really compare that either. But my best estimate is, if they're both in the same race and they both run their best, Secretariat wins by 10. That's how good he was.
Right. But, you know, but that's, it doesn't really matter.
Correct. I mean, it does. I mean, no, that's right. You just compare American Pharoah to what he's running against, right? It's like, but it's the old, they didn't beat anybody. Well, they only beat all the people in front of them, right? He was great.
It's an exclusive club of 12.
Exactly. That's the point.
Okay,
yeah,
I could care less at that point.
Yeah, that's the point. You just got to, Steve. It's a club of 12, of which the original was in 1919 with Sir Barton, and nobody even called it the Triple Crown.
Right.
It got named in the 30s. We had three in the 30s. Four in the 40s, none in the 50s or 60s, the three great ones in the 70s, none in the 80s, none in the 90s, none in the early 2000s, and here we are. So, yeah, if you get in that club, that's forever. That's the forever club. So, yeah, it doesn't really matter what the comparisons are. You're in, and you're always in.
Okay, guess what? You just ran into immortality, okay?
Exactly.
Okay.
Right, now the horse became a horse racing legend, and probably even more so, Steve, because it broke this streak. It's one of the many reasons Secretariat is so beloved.
Yes.
People forget a little bit now, but he broke a 25-year streak.
Yep.
Citation had won in 48. People were starting to say, it's too hard, it's just crazy, nobody can do it. And then this horse goes out and breaks the records, the track record, the Churchill Downs, which has never been threatened, breaks the track record at Pimlico, and breaks the world record at the Belmont Stakes. And that's why he's always going to be the most beloved racehorse to ever live, just because of the way it happened. But, yeah, American Pharoah's in the club, man. It's a great club to be in.
It's very exclusive.
Very.
I was listening to your good friend Dave Johnson. I was listening to his show on Sirius Saturday down the stretch. It was interesting when they were talking, talking in glowing terms about the horse, talking in glowing terms about Bob Baffert. But when it came to the owners, evidently the Zayats, based on the conversations I was listening to on Dave's show, are not great about paying all their bills.
Well, they should be able to pay them all now, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting, a dichotomy, because Bob is a beloved figure in the sport.
Yes.
I mean, there's people that have, I mean, I've known him for years, and I think I told you this all the way through. He's always been good with the media. He was unreal this year. I mean, he just, up into and including yesterday morning, when he lets people into the little courtyard there where the horse is to pet the horse and take pictures.
How about that?
I mean, how cool was that? There's a guy who gets it. He understood it's now everybody's horse and something to share. As far as the Zayats, the people that weren't rooting for a Triple Crown, Steve, that's why.
Yeah.
And not the young kid, Justin. I mean, he's just a kid out of college. But Ahmed is a strange dude. He's well known in the business as what we call a slow pay or a no pay. And he just doesn't like to pay his bills. And he's frustrated a lot of people in Kentucky. He did have a bankruptcy that he went through because he overextended himself. He bought too many horses. He got out of that. Now he had this gambler sue him, who said that he had fronted $2 million for Ahmed, who's a legendary bad gambler, and I blew through the $2 million and never bothered to pay the guy back after he fronted the money. Now I don't know what's real or what isn't.
Right,
the suit
sure.
got thrown out last week on statute of limitations grounds. I do know he's a huge gambler. I don't know how good a gambler is. My suspicion is he's not great. I will say this about him. I talked to him for the first and only time in my life, Steve, for about 10 minutes in the Derby Museum after the Derby, and he was great. Couldn't have been any nicer. It was just him and me. But my experience is everybody who wins the Derby is as nice as they're ever going to be in their life.
So, right.
having said all that, the family, he, and I don't know his wife, his son, I just noticed, say hello to, they've been great. Through the 5 weeks of the Triple Crown, they've been awesome how they've shared their horse. The fact that it looks like they're going to keep running him through the end of the year is great. So from that standpoint, he's been fine. But does he have a history? Will this be a made-for-Disney movie? yes to a history and no to made-for-Disney.
I had to laugh because you were on Lifetime, by the way, on Saturday. They did have the movie Secretariat, and I still say... I still say
my
to this day,
question was as good as ever. I'm sure. Legendary
still,
performance. There's a couple of good stories out there, but thank you. Hopefully, people will get on Philly.com and read mine. But if you get on SI.com, read Tim Layden's story.
Yeah.
He did an awesome job. Tim had a lot of inside access, and Tim's a terrific writer,
yep.
good friend of mine, who was one of my co-stars in the Secretary
yes.
movie. and of all the stories I've read so far. His was the best one I saw, and it's out there. So if people want to just get it, because that's the whole thing. Look, everybody got to see what happened Saturday. It's what happened leading up to it, and,
yeah.
and afterwards that's key. And Tim really had a front row seat for a lot of stuff.
Take me to the restaurant. You kept referencing in your story the restaurant where Bob Baffert was.
Yeah, here's the deal on King Umberto. It's the legendary Italian place from Belmont Park, and it's always chaos after the Belmont Stakes. And sometimes you got to be in the right place at the right time to get something, Steve. And I was there 3 years ago after Union Rags won the Belmont. It was the year Olive and Other was going for the Triple Crown and
right.
never made it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I referenced in the story, it was the year Bob Baffert had his heart attack. And then he runs second in all three Triple Crown races after leading with almost all the way in all three races and gets beaten all of them. And he comes out late that night. We're getting finished dinner, and he was just finished, and he walks out with a suit, impeccably dressed as always, and just says, just a Triple Crown for second, which is the quote I used. Well, I don't know if Bob ever made it to King Umberto Saturday night. I don't think he did. He had a 9 p.m. reservation, but as I said, he didn't even get to the barn. I was not actually at King Umberto Saturday night, but one of my good buddies, Jay Prithman from Daily Racing Form, I texted him. I said, "Did you see Baffert at King Umberto?" Because I wanted to use it for my story. He says, "No, you didn't think he ever made it." But he took a picture of the menu and sent it to me. So that's how I knew that they had two new menu items on Saturday night, the American Pharaoh and the Veal of Triple Crown. So that's how I got those details. Yeah, I wasn't actually there myself, but sometimes it's just you got to ask the right questions, and hopefully the right people show up. But yeah, people love that today. I'm getting a lot of comments about that part of the story.
You mentioned the possibility that the horse could run the Haskell at Monmouth, could run the Travers at Saratoga, and of course there's the Breeders' Cup. The important Dick, what is the importance to the sport that the horse does get out there and run a couple of more times, just as to what it can mean?
It's huge. He's got to run, Steve. They can't just whisk him out of there and say it's all over. That just wouldn't do. They can't breed him until next year anyway.
Right.
Right. The breeding season doesn't start till after January 1st. So there's no need to retire him right now. Now, I know they're going to have to pay a significant premium on the insurance policy. My guess is they probably will share some of that with the place where he's going to stand at stud. They've already sold his stallion rights. The farm holds the rights to this horse starting on January 1st. That's why I don't see him racing as a four-year-old. I think the Zions want to run him. I think Baffert wants to run him, and I think he'll run. And I think he'll run next in the Haskell at Monmouth. That's a it's 30 minutes from Teaneck. mm-hmm. where, or maybe less than an hour. It's not far from Teaneck, where the Zients live in New Jersey.
Right.
Baffert has won the race 7 times, has a great relationship with the management at Monmouth Park. I see him running there. NBC, it's on NBC. I know management in Monmouth is already saying, look, our record crowd's 50,000. We know we'd break it. I mean, it's the first time anybody'd have a chance to see a Triple Crown winner.
Right.
And it's in 37 years. It's the same deal, right? That's why the Preakness is such a cool race every year. You get to see the Derby winner for the first time. Well, that happens every year. This doesn't happen that much. Every 37 years, it seems like. But, yeah, I think he's going to run, I think, the Haskell, maybe the Travers. I know they're gonna dying to get him here for the Pennsylvania Derby, like California Chrome
yep.
came last year as the final prep for the Breeders' Cup. And I would think if everything goes according to plan, his last race would be the Breeders' Cup Classic at Keeneland. And it's perfect because they can go run the race and then put him on a van and send him to Coolmore, which is right in Lexington. That's where he's going to stand at stud. He can chill out for a couple of months and then he can start making Little American Pharaoh starting in 2016.
It was a great Saturday Night Live line about Secretariat. They said, they're giving us $10 million to do that?
Yeah. No, it's a great gig. It's interesting. Secretariat was syndicated in 73 for $6 million. When you think about that in today's terms, how much money that would be. I don't know exactly what the number is for American Pharoah. I suspect there were some contingencies if he won the Triple Crown that it would go up. But given the modern breeding market and where we are, Steve, he's probably a $20 to $25 million horse, would be my guess.
Yeah.
But again, one of the great non-sales of all time. You know, I think we talked about this. The Zients had him in the Saratoga Yearling Sale 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And the bidding went up, and it went up, and it got to $300,000. And Zients said, that ain't enough. Well, guess what? Turned out he was right. Wasn't enough.
Dick, the story's brilliant. Check it out on philly.com or just pick up a copy of the Philadelphia Daily News. Also, strongly recommending Tim Layden's article on Sports Illustrated and SI.com. But thanks so much. Appreciate it. I know it's the story you've always wanted to write, and it came out, I think, exactly the way you always hoped it would.
Steve, I appreciate it, and it's been fun talking all through the Triple Crown, and finally we get to see one. It was very cool being there. I think it might be the top event I've ever covered. I just absolutely love being there Saturday.
Yeah, that's why I had to have you on today, because I knew what it meant. So, Dick, thanks, man.
You got it, Steve. See you, buddy.
All right, Dick Girardi. Road closure. Kevin has the latest on that because it personally affects him, and that's the only reason why we're airing it.
Actually, it doesn't. But I know there's a lot of people in the Herndon area, Route 147. That is closed in Jackson Township, Northumberland County. Emergency services telling us trees are down and have closed the roadway. So, again, that's Route 147 closed in Jackson Township, Northumberland County. Use caution in that area. And also, we're getting some word of some trees down in the southern Northumberland County and still more thunderstorms yet to come.
All right. Basketball rules officially approved. We'll tell you about that. News bottom of the hour. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio as part of the Kevin Hurt Clam Bake. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Fans have been writing in left and right on Facebook and also on Twitter asking where you can get the Kevin Hurt Clam Bake. So is the health department on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. They'll take care of all of your insurance needs. And they'll do so at a price that fits your budget. They will take really, really good care of you. It's Purdy Insurance, Marcus Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. We've talked about a lot of things today. Wide variety. From Penn State getting its bowl money back, $4.5 million for last year. It'll go up to $6.9 million or in that neighborhood for the upcoming year. So back to a sense of normalcy there. Penn State participated in the 2014 bowl season, had that sanction lifted. So obviously they should be getting their share and did, and it was done on a presidential level. So for those of you on the show who wondered why, I don't understand why I had Delaney on. He didn't ask about the bowl thing. I had my reasons. Good enough, Kev?
I think so, yeah.
I frustrate you.
Every day, but not always for the same thing.
That's the reason. Okay. All right, you know, you may, whatever. Okay. We talked about, somebody wrote some, you know, James Franklin and the used car salesman and this, that, and the, whatever. And I went through a long run about, hey, look, just what you see sometimes outwardly is not who the guy really is. Well, I can tell you that's not who the guy really is. It's part of his personality. Being outgoing, effusive, yes. No question. But he is so multidimensional and locks in with complete seriousness on sacrifice, work ethic, competitiveness, teamwork, academics, discipline. He is forever showing examples to his team about, look, okay, here's something that came up with X team and X other part of the country. You're under a microscope every day. Make right decisions. Pair up. And why, you know, he hired PJ Mullen because he wants to have an organized feel to Penn State being involved in the community and thus the variety of community activities that they go to. It's not lip service when you're actually doing it. I watch him coach. Details, minute details, mean something to him. Player does something that's over the line in his opinion. he penalizes them 15 yards and says, look, you just cost your team 15 yards by doing that. I remember last year in a scrimmage, they were doing just a series of fakes, and they ran a fake punt and went for a touchdown. Player did a slam dunk over the crossbar. I'm not going to say who it was or what the play was. I'm not going to give away what the play was. All right? And he backed them up 15 yards. And he said, you can't do that. It's who he is. Very, very detail-oriented. Very precise. Very caring. It's, you know? Used car salesman always brings to me that it's some sort of act. It's not an act if that's their natural personality. And I see what his personality is. I'm around him hours at a time during days for months. So I probably have a little better feel for him than maybe some other people do only because of that. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. If I had sons that were recruitable and were thought to be worthy of playing football at Penn State and he showed up at my door, there would be no other decision. That's exactly the man I would entrust my sons to play for. Easy call. I have a deep-seated respect for this guy. I genuinely like him, but I have a deep-seated respect for him. So we talked about that. We talked about American Pharoah winning the Belmont and the Triple Crown. He's your secretariat of this generation. Now, changes in college basketball. Women's game, dramatic. See the change in the women's game? 4 10-minute quarters for the women's game.
That is dramatic.
4 10-minute quarters for the women's game. The men's game is going to have the shot clock reduced from 35 to 30. The arc under the basket will go to the NBA width of 4 feet instead of 3. Trying to clean up down there. The other part that is the 5-second rule goes bye-bye, really good. What do you need a 5-second rule if you have a shot clock to begin with? I always found that to be absurd. 5 second, closely guarded. It got a shot clock. Who cares? It was a rule that made no sense. But here's one. Here's a rule change that makes a lot of sense. I bring the ball up. 8 seconds. I'm trapped. I call timeout. The old rule used to be, you got a new 10 seconds. I always thought that was stupid. Evidently, they do too. You call timeout, you come back out. You have 2 seconds to get the ball over the line. I love it. That's great. Also, the number of timeouts in a game reduced from 5 to 4. You will still have to use it or lose it in the first half. You will have no more than 3 to start the second half. So there you go. Those are some of the rule changes they put in. I like it. I think they're all steps in the right direction. And the women's game going to 4 10-minute quarters. Now the question has to be, will the men eventually transition in that direction?
What's the theory behind the two halves?
I don't know.
Well, think about it. It's the only level of basketball where you're playing two halves and not 4 quarters, periods, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I mean, college basketball's always been a little different than the pro game anyway. You know, it's got different rules to begin with. The lane, for example, is not as wide. The number of timeouts, not as many. The foul out rule is 1 every 8 minutes, so in the NBA, the pro game, 48 minutes, it's 6 fouls to foul out. College game, it's 5. I mean, just they have different rules for both sports, that's all.
No, I just wondered if there was a reason they went to the two-half system. I mean, when you look at it time-wise and commercial break-wise,
my whole life.
time-wise and commercial break-wise for the media timeouts, it's about the same in the women's game as it will be in the men's game, just the way things break up.
I'm just saying that it's, in my lifetime, it's always been two halves, so it's, you know, I'm not exactly young. there are moments out in the golf course I feel young. But I think new equipment helps that. But it's always been two halves in my life, so I can't answer that question.
I thought there might be just a reason behind it.
No, I don't know. I have no idea. You'd have to ask Naismith. But the women will go to four quarters. Four 10-minute quarters. And maybe it is a forerunner to the men going to four 10-minute quarters. I don't know. We'll see. See how it works out for the women's game. The women's game will now be more closely aligned with the WNBA as to how they do it. But these are all good changes. Shot clock from 35 to 30. 5 second closely guarded, eliminated. 10 second rule. Hey, look, you got 10 seconds to bring the ball over. You call a timeout in the middle at six, you only have four to bring it over, not a new 10. Perfect.
That's a really good change.
Yeah, that's a really good change. Four timeouts overall with only three available in the second half. Another really good change to quicken the pace of the game. Four-foot arc as opposed to three, I like it. A little, you know, underneath the basket. That, you know, maybe I'll clean that up a little bit. I like that as well. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I would change.
Well, you know, the big change is the timeout situation, because there are so many media timeouts anyway.
All right. And the other one will be you can look at a shot clock violation on replay anytime. That's the other one.
You know, one thing I wanted to ask, and you mentioned that one other time, when the shot clock goes off, there's a buzzer that sounds, but the backboard doesn't light up. Mm-hmm. That only happens at the end of the period or end of the half.
Right. Yep. So that's the only time it happens. But you can now review that anytime. It used to be an unreviewable play. Thus the Nigel Hayes play, when he was able to score when the shot clock clearly was at zero. That is now a reviewable play.
From a technological standpoint, I wonder if it would be cost prohibited to change the color of the light so that the light behind the backboard would go off and maybe into a blue instead for the shot clock violation.
I don't know. You'd have to... I don't know.
Because we've talked about it many times. I said the one thing I'd like to see at the high school level, and I understand it, they've discussed it many times, I understand, is a 45-second shot clock in high school. But the big drawback there is the expense to the schools of putting in those clocks, yeah. And then you have another clock operator, too, that you have to pay.
Yeah, I understand that. Only other thing I would think about doing in the men's game, the only other thing, and this is something FIBA is doing this year internationally, and it's something I think is worthy looking at, is that they have a 24-second shot clock in FIBA, just like the NBA. If you grab an offensive rebound, the clock recycles to 14 and not to 24. With the theory of being, look, you're the 10 seconds to bring the ball up the floor, you're already up the floor. I like that idea, but it was not on the proposal list. I think that's progressive.
I see where you're coming from there. I don't know. I have to think about that one, and I'd have to see that in action a little more.
I had never heard of it until now. FIBA's not going to do it until this upcoming season, Kev. They haven't done it yet. But that's one I'm really, really interested in seeing, because I think that is a very forward-thinking, progressive rule.
I mean, you make a valid point. You don't need the 10 seconds to get across the court. You're already there.
Now, in practical application, you may be absolutely right. In practical application, it may be, this isn't working. But I'm really interested to see how the international game plays out with it and if it does make a difference. Because the thought process is, you, in other words, you already got the ball over there. You're already up by the basket. What do you need the extra 10 seconds for?
The biggest issue I could see is the pressure on the clock operator, on the shot clock operator, because they're going to have two different buttons to hit now.
Ah, the dudes get paid.
I realize that, but this makes it so you cannot watch the game. I mean, you cannot afford to watch the game, and you know what I mean by that. I mean, if you're scoring the game or you're the clock operator or whatever, you can't watch the game. You have to focus on your end of the game.
That's your job.
That's sometimes tough to do.
The difference between you and the guy up in the stands is you're actually being paid.
That's also true.
He paid, you're getting paid. I'm really not all that concerned about the additional pressure on you to run the shot.
That's an excellent point.
Okay? It's really not, you know, they're giving, you're, you know, in other words, that dude forked over lettuce to get in. You're getting lettuce. So I have no concern about your ability to, quote, watch the game. I have none. Zero. But these are all good rules. There's one of them I look at and say, ooh, that's a step backwards. I think they're all step forward rules, every one of them. Shot clock at 30. Timeouts reduced to 4 with only 3 in the second half. Arc wider from 3 feet to 4 feet under the basket. 5-second rule gone. Replays available for any shot clock violation. You get 10 seconds to bring the ball over the court. And guess what? That's all you get are 10 seconds. You do not get a fresh 10 after a timeout. I think they're all rules in the right direction. The only thing I did not see in this is whether the coach can call a timeout or not. And I'm assuming they're sticking with that as well, because it looks like they gave a thumbs up to all the rules. All right. We'll come back, wrap things up in a moment. The Kevin Herr Clam Bake continues on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Can I ask a very simple question about LeBron James? The other night, game one, I thought was just a scintillating, outstanding basketball game that Golden State happened to win. They were a little bit better. Last night was more of a defensive grinding game, but Cleveland won and tied the series up. And LeBron had a triple-double last night. Great numbers. You know, and he doesn't have the talent around him that he had during the regular season because he doesn't have Kyrie Irving and he doesn't have Kevin Love. Whatever happened in sports where the question after a game is not, wow, how great a game was that, to, I've got a whole bunch of criticisms. Let's get to it. When did that start to happen? Game one was a great basketball game. Like, I thought the two Stanley Cup playoff games down in Tampa were fabulous games to watch. Game two of the NBA Finals was a fabulous game to watch. Yeah, Curry didn't shoot the ball well. That's obvious. He struggled shooting it. Yeah, LeBron missed the last shot in regulation in each of the two games. But when did we start becoming such a picayune? The biggest thing out of the game is let's criticize it instead of saying, wow, what a great game that was. Wow, what great plays. What great players. When did that start? Second American pharaoh one. Well, he's no secretariat. He doesn't have to be. He has to be the first American pharaoh. Hey, he's in an exclusive club of 12 horses. 12. Hey, 12. Hey, It's been 96 years since Sir Barton won the first Triple Crown. In 96 years, you've had 12. You know how special that is? I don't care what he is, if what he's compared to Secretariat. Okay? They both have the same label, Triple Crown winner. Why do we have a tendency to want to get to the what's wrong part instead of celebrating the fun part? Notice I didn't bring the Phillies into this.
Thank you.
But everything is pick, 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 pick. Well, LeBron, he missed the last shot in each of the first two games. You know how great he's played? And I don't care if he's Michael Jordan or not. Hey, LeBron is one of the 10 best players in the history of the game. Michael Jordan is one of the 10 best players in the history of the game. As Kevin knows, I don't like to pick best ever. Picking best ever just does nothing for me. Different eras, different times, different body structures, different ways of doing things, all had to be taken into account. We were lucky to watch Michael Jordan. We're lucky to watch LeBron James. We're lucky to watch Steph Curry. We're lucky to watch Magic and Larry Bird. We're lucky to watch Juan Pablo Montoya.